Edwin lines one deep left center field. Long, high drive, and there she goes. Second deck. A two-run home run for Edwin. His third, and the Blue Jays soar out in front of the Orioles 3-2 here in the bottom of the sixth.
Hard to imagine now that the Blue Jays were down 2-1 going into the sixth inning. But they exploded in that sixth. You heard that home run by Edwin Encarnacion that followed the leadoff double by Jose Bautista. Then with two out and a runner on first, the roof fell in. Brian Mattis walked Rajay Davis, and the call came for former Blue Jays closer Kevin Gregg, who Blue Jays fans apparently have turned into their heads the worst pitcher ever in the history of the major leagues. And today he came through. In spades, he was awful. Gregg gives up an RBI single to Jeff Mathis, then a two-run double to Yunel Escobar, then Kelly Johnson doubles off the wall, then Gregg walks Bautista and walks Encarnacion to load the bases, and Buck Showalter sitting there in the Baltimore Orioles dugout thinking, you're doing this and now you can't throw strikes? You're going to wear this inning. You're staying out there until it's over. Gregg gets two strikes on Brett Laurie and then hits him in the back to drive in another run before getting Ben Francisco to fly to right field. Just an awful, awful outing for Kevin Gregg. It was 3-2 Blue Jays when he came in. It was 8-2 Blue Jays when he left. The Jays added another run in the eighth, an RBI single by Laurie to score Encarnacion, who added a double to his two-run home run, and 9-2 is your final score. Kyle Drabek, 7 1/3 innings, allows one earned run of his two total runs on six hits with one walk, and that walk didn't come until the seventh inning. It's the first time in his major league career that Kyle Drabek has gotten an out in the eighth inning. Luis Perez finishes up the eighth, and then out comes Evan Crawford to work the ninth and does a great job in his major league debut. And the Blue Jays celebrate Jackie Robinson Day with a 9-2 win over the Orioles. They knock Baltimore out of sole possession of first place in the American League East and move back into a tie for first. And it'll be just the Jays and Orioles if the Red Sox can hold on and beat Tampa. Boston is up 5-4 in the top of the seventh inning. And if, you know, the Angels beat the Yankees, that shouldn't be an issue. And we're going to talk about it here on the Honda Post Game Show. It's the Blue Jays talk at 416-870-0590, star 590 on a cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Also on Twitter, at Wilderness590, though, as always, I would much prefer to talk to you when we're on the show, on the phone, than to have you send me a tweet. And since most people tweet from their phones, just, you know, give me a call. Let's start in our nation's capital. Joe is in Ottawa. You're going to lead things off on the Blue Jays talk.
Hey, Mike, Jays win today. We're 5-4. We're on pace for a 90-game season, I suppose.
Well, 90 wins, yeah.
90 wins, yeah. What the numbers I want to talk to you about are 8 1/3, 7-7, 7 1/3.
Is that the length of the starting pitching outings in the last four games?
You bet, Mike. Romero, Morrow, Alvarez, Drabek, you know, four great starts in a row, and that's what's going to be the key to success for the Blue Jays this year, I believe.
Well, I think that if they can get this kind of starting pitching all year long, and I said it in the spring, they're going to win the division. Now, we're nine games in, but the starting pitching has been outstanding. If it can stay this good, there's nothing that can stop this team. I don't believe it can stay this good, but it's just been a pleasure to watch so far.
Well, it has been a pleasure, and I think some of the credit, I'd really like to point out the coaching of Bruce Walton, the pitching coach, because Kyle Drabek, I mean, let's be honest, he was not in the discussion for a starting role at the beginning of this season. And they really
sure he was.
But you know, kind of further down the line, he wasn't one of the
top five.
Yes, and they really, you know, rather than sort of, you know, just kind of saying, oh, you know, you've got to focus, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, they adopted practical suggestions for him to adopt in terms of his mechanics, and I think you can really see the consistency now, and that's a credit to Bruce Walton. That's a credit to John Farrell for keeping Walton on as the pitching coach. I mean, this Jay, it's from top to bottom, this Jays organization, it's about talent acquisition and player development. It's a tribute to everyone, I think.
Well, and I think when you have an organization that's run by smart people who aren't looking over their shoulders worried that, you know, if you bring in another smart guy, he's just going to try to take your job, I think that's significant too. And, you know, you make a good point about the ropes and about the lines, and I don't know if you saw when Drabek went out to the mound today, first thing he did was draw a big X, his landing spot, the lines in his, for his front foot, where it came down, and that's just an outgrowth of what had gone on in the spring. So, you know, it's a very good point. Practical solutions to these problems, and that's helped Drabek get to where he is right now, and where he is looks outstanding.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out. I didn't see that. You know, I only got to see one game live last year, and it was Henderson Alvarez, and I was so impressed with him and with his composure on the mound.
He's really impressive.
And I see that in Drabek now, but, you know, when you're at the game, as you know, there's lots of little things you see. Last year I saw the Jays against Tampa. I sat 10 rows back at third base because, of course, I want to see Brett Laurie, and I get a chance to see Evan Longoria. The thing that really amazed me was Evan Longoria, before the start of every inning, he's having this big chat with Brian Butterfield, the third base coach. I mean, you'd almost think the game is interrupting a family reunion. And it just, again, it just showed me that the respect that the players around the league have for this Jays coaching staff, it's really remarkable.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate the call. And, yeah, well, how can you not chat with Brian Butterfield? Just so we remember, Kyle Drabek was not a disaster from day one last season, as much as people would kind of like to have that in their memory. He did throw seven innings of one-hitter in his first start, and the Blue Jays won each of Drabek's first five starts last season. And in fact, he gave up one earned run in each of his first two starts. But I will say this. In his first two starts last year, Kyle Drabek, despite giving up only two earned runs, threw 13 innings and walked seven. In his first two starts this season, Kyle Drabek has also given up two earned runs, and he's thrown 12 and two-thirds innings, but he's walked four. And only one today, and one against the three walks against a very, very patient Red Sox team. His first three starts last year, 10 walks against the Twins, Angels, and Mariners, teams that are not very patient. So if you want to see a corner turned, what may be is three walks in his first start, one walk today. And again, his deepest penetration in any game in his major league career as Drabek gets an out in the eighth as a starter for the first time in the big leagues. Max is in Scarborough. Max, Blue Jays 9, Orioles 2, and the Jays are tied for first again.
Well, it's really good that they are tied. I mean, like, at first we kind of figured it was going to be the same old, but this is a more greater team than we've seen in the past couple of years. I think John Farrell has took this team to a more aggressive baseball kind of playing that we've been seeing other teams do.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I like to give the players credit for stuff, and I think they're doing really well. I think John Farrell's doing a fine job, no question about it.
He is doing a fine job. I think the players are starting to hit more, and they want to play just like, you know, like the Bulls, Sox, and the Yankees have done in the past. But this is a team that really wants to, you know, really become respectable in the American League to win, to get into the playoffs and into the World Series possibly.
All right, thank you, Max. I like the optimism. I like the enthusiasm. You know, they all want to do that. This is a team that legitimately believes that it can do that. And I think in the past I've mentioned this before. I think they thought they could. They were pretty sure that they were good. Pretty sure that they were going to win. I think now they feel like they know they're going to win a ball game, and obviously they're not. And if they win 5 out of every 9 like they have to this point in the season, then they'll win 90 games. So even if you win, if you lose every other day in a 9-game span, you're still doing really well as long as you bookend that streak with wins. But this is a group that is, it's loaded. And it's a matter of the talent coming to the fore. And so far this season, we've seen some ups and downs. But they are getting to the point where you can see that playoff future. Johnny is in Grimsby. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Mike.
Go ahead.
Am I on? Okay. Hey, a comment and a question. First off, I was so excited when I saw Kevin Gregg warming up in the bullpen because I knew he would absolutely have a horrible inning, and he didn't disappoint.
No, you didn't. Come
on. Well, I expected that. Let's come on. I mean, and
he's not that bad. I know that all these Blue Jay fans want to tweak him and talk about how terrible he is, and you're just the first who's mentioned it, Johnny, but it was all over Twitter, that whole, as soon as he started to come in. Kevin Gregg was, he made for a lot of nervous nights that one year where he was the Blue Jays closer, but he was fine. He was fine, and he was way better than the guys they had here last year.
Yeah, I guess we just remember the bad more than the good.
Yeah, you remember the six blown saves, and you remember, you know, biting your nails down to biting your fingers down to the knuckles every time he actually got a save.
He made it exciting.
He certainly did. But he was never, never as a Blue Jay as bad as he was today.
Yeah, that's true. Question. You were saying, and I completely agree with you, that they could totally win the division if the starting pitching continues the way it has. But what I was wondering is, you know, Drabek and Alvarez being so young, how long will they be able to pitch? Because I remember a couple years ago they shut Morrow down early. And so,
it has less to do with age than it has to do with how many innings they pitched the year before. And Morrow was a guy who kind of got bounced back and forth from the bullpen by the Mariners, so he wasn't really, really stretched out. Alvarez threw 150 innings last year, so they'll be comfortable with him throwing 180 this year. And you may get to a point late in the season where you have to shut him down or where you have to skip him a few times and kind of keep your eye on him. Drabek, the same thing, threw 150 innings last year. So I don't think that we're going to run into too much trouble with them. You may see, you know, a skip here, 9 days between starts every once in a while so that they can keep them going until late in the season. But it's not going to be this hard, fast 130 innings and shut the guy down in the middle of August. We are Extendo. Well, right now we're just Blue Jays talking. We will Extendo the Blue Jays talk. And we will hear from my co-host. I'm his co-host, I think, on the Blue Jays this week. Ben Ennis. I'm not quite sure how it works, but he will join us. And we may be able to prevail upon him to kind of sit in and some of the Extendo-ness on our flagship station and take some calls. I know he's a very, very busy man. We'll see how that works. He's all important and stuff on TV now. We will get to more calls in a second, but first, let's listen in on what the skipper had to say. Here are the post-game comments from John Farrell.
Just another outstanding effort on Kyle's part today. A well-pitched game on both sides through the first five-plus innings. And I really thought Kyle not only pitched ahead in the count, but the use of his two-seamer, his changeup, very effective against the number of left-handers that they threw at him today. And then we have a chance to kind of break things open in the sixth inning. I thought in the sixth, the fact that Rajay worked out a walk and went first to third on Mathis base hit to left field might have been the key to that inning. If they don't try to cut that ball off or cut the ball off to try to cut him down at third base, that ball might get through to Polino with the potential cutting down Francisco at the plate. So overall, just a solid offensive performance as that inning started to unravel, and good to see Crawford get on the mound for his debut here today.
John, how impressed are you with how Kyle is handling the situations when he does get into jams? Because we've seen it last year where maybe he'd get a little bit rattled, but he seems to be going right through right now.
I mean, it's a tale of two people in some ways. He has kept things under control. He's kept his composure. I thought today he and Jeff Mathis worked exceptionally well together. Just the use of his secondary stuff, double up on his changeup a number of times, doubled up on his curveball. But the fact is, when things don't go his way behind him, either an execution of a pitch, a call, a play behind him, he has been able to separate from that and go out and execute the next pitch. So a huge step forward from where he finished last year, just in his own personal maturity.
John, I'm just wondering, Kyle didn't seem to throw as many sliders and cutters as he has in the past. Is that just because of the number of lefties, or is there are we sort of seeing an evolution of him into a guy who might throw his curve more and go with the two-seamer instead of the four-seamer?
That's by design. We've tried to reduce the use of that pitch from the start of spring training. The emphasis is cutter. There's been much more emphasis on his two-seamer to give him a pitch that's got some late life in the strike zone with the ability to put the ball on the ground. I think for any young pitcher, when they realize they have late life in the strike zone, it allows them to relax and trust their stuff a little bit more, and that seems to have worked with Kyle.
How has Drabek changed his mentality from last year to so early in this season? How do you think he has changed that?
He's recognizing the effort level in his delivery. When he'd pitched more like a middle linebacker, that intensity worked against him. And he'd start to overthrow, he'd lose command of the strike zone. But you see the frustration from every now and then, but he has the wherewithal to step back, regroup, and kind of release some of that tension. And the fact that he's online more with his delivery, it's allowed him to command the baseball with better consistency. But just the overall emotional control is the biggest improvement.
John, I know that you felt the offense was coming around, but it was nice to see that. It must have been gratifying to see that sixth inning come around, especially started by Bautista's double.
Yeah, I think Jose's, he's getting closer. He's not where he'll be by any means. You can still see him at times where the timing is improving, but yet not fully there. What Edwin has done right from the start of the season, really going back to the start of spring training, he has given us a legitimate middle of the order bat. But then when you see what Ben Francisco, who's got a very basic swing and a very maintenance-free swing, he can sit for 3 or 4 days, come off the bench, and be productive, particularly against left-handed pitching. So, and Rajay Davis, once again, it's a different, almost a tale of two people, again, against right-handed and left-handed pitching, but it's good to see the number of people getting involved.
John, has Edwin shortened his stroke up a bit? He seems to be making far more solid contact.
He has, and if you look at the finish to his swing, a two-handed finish versus the top hand release, it makes him more compact. It keeps his hands closer to his body to allow him to stay inside the baseball, and it's a more repeatable swing. There's less movement. It hasn't taken away from his power, so he's in a good place right now.
Just getting back to Drabek for a minute, a lot of times you'll hear pitchers say that it helps their mechanics if they can cut down on the number of pitches. Is there some sort of that working here with Kyle as well?
Part of our approach with him has been twofold. Yeah, the mental side of it, but then on the fundamental side of just reducing and refining. Take three quality pitches, make them more consistent rather than thinking you've got to go four or five. That's just, in some ways, trying to ram a round peg into a square hole.
John, you touched on Crawford getting a chance to pitch today. What impressed you the most about what you've seen from him from spring training on to getting the chance here?
Three very good pitches. We saw one curveball today where he got the strikeout looking of Betterment. But in spring training, he really stuck his fastball in the strike zone well. And a left-hander that can throw in the low 90s with the ability to have one, if not two, above-average breaking pitches, he's got a lot working for him. He's the type of guy that's going to pitch in the big leagues a long time.
There he is, manager John Farrell, singing the praises of Evan Crawford at the end there. Crawford making his major league debut today with a scoreless ninth inning as the Blue Jays wipe out the Baltimore Orioles 9-2 to avoid the sweep, get back up over 500, get themselves on a 90-win pace for the season, and move back into a tie for first place in the American League East. So all kinds of good stuff happening with your Toronto Blue Jays with this win today. This is the Blue Jays Talk. I'm Mike Wilner taking your phone calls, and let's get right back to it. Evan is in Guelph. Evan, congratulations on a terrific Major League debut today. Evan, are you there? We don't have Evan. Too bad, because that would have been kind of funny. So let's wait until the boys tell us who's going to be next. I'm thinking it's going to be Zach in Toronto. Hello, Zach.
Hey, what's going on, Mike?
Oh, sitting, watching a ball game, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me too. Cool. So I hope it's not inappropriate that I'm joining Jay's talk in this regard.
We miss you around the hallways of the Blue Jays radio network. And the people who are tuned in, can I reveal your secret identity?
Yeah, go nuts.
This is Zach Cooper on the line with us, our former substitute host of this program at some points in time, and our great radio colleague for lo those many years, who has ditched us for the world of video gaming.
You're a beautiful man, Mike. I did have something Blue Jays related that I wanted to sort of put to you. And I think part of it is because I haven't really been able to watch as much as I would have liked or listen to as much as I would have liked. But Colby Rasmus, I know today wasn't, you know, one of his most spectacular games, but overall, I think this season I've been noticing a lot more as far as positive output from the guy. And I'm curious if there's something you've noticed or, you know, had him speak about specifically as to what has led to this improvement or the consistency on his part.
First of all, today was a very Colby Rasmusic day as far as 2012 goes, I think, because that first at bat, he hits what should have been an RBI double down the line that's turned into a double play, and that's kind of par for the course for his season, with the exception of that three-hit game yesterday, and he plays spectacular defense in center field. I honestly believe that the difference is simply that his head was spinning last year, that, you know, he's not a guy, I think, about whom it could be fairly said, who was used to upheaval in his life. He's a very keep-it-simple type. And to go through what he went through in St. Louis last year, to have it come to a head and to get traded to a new league, a new country, a place he'd never been before, honestly not 100% sure if it was a place he'd even heard of before, but here he is, and it takes a while to get used to. And you know, it's funny because I have to talk to you differently than I talk to everybody else, because I know your frame of reference and your knowledge, and I know basketball is big for you. And you look at what happened to a guy like Lamar Odom this year, and this is a lost season for him because of the trade and all the things that went around it. And I honestly believe that last year was a completely lost year for Colby Rasmus. All he was waiting for from the moment he got off the plane to become a Blue Jay was for 2011 to be over. And once it was, then he could really get down to work. And it's too bad that it went down like that. But I think that's what happened.
I appreciate the answer. And in hindsight now, I wish I'd started off the call with saying first time, long time. But thanks for taking the call, Mike, and it's great to hear your voice every day again.
Thanks for making the call. Zach Cooper, we miss you around here, and it's great for Zach Cooper to call in and be part of the Jays talk. And now Ben Ennis is going to rip him on Twitter for doing just that. Jonah is in Thornhill. Jonah, tell me we're not going to talk about Brett Cecil.
We're not, I promise you, Mike.
Thank you.
I was just wondering if you could give me a little bit of insight into why John Farrell, relative to last year, seems to have curtailed his aggressiveness a little bit with respect to manufacturing runs. The leadoff hitter reached five times today, but he seemed reluctant to employ the hit-and-run, steal a base, and it seems somewhat counterintuitive given the Jays coming into this afternoon second worst in the AL in batting average, third worst in on-base percentage.
And yet, what, third or fourth in runs scored?
Yes.
I don't know that it's been curtailed. I think that whole aggressive, super base-stealing kind of stuff got curtailed last year on opening day when Rajay Davis got hurt. And then when Travis Snyder got sent down at the end of April, he was leading the team in stolen bases at the time. Mm-hmm. But I think for the hit-and-run sort of thing, you kind of have to pick your spots. And I know people love the hit-and-run,
yeah,
and I do too, with the right guy. Kelly Johnson, who is hitting second for the Blue Jays right now and who was the second-place hitter in two of those situations in which the leadoff man reached, is not a good hit-and-run guy. He's a guy who strikes out a lot. And even though he has good command of the strike zone in that he'll take his share of walks, He's also not a big bat control guy. He's a guy with power who gets on, but who also strikes out a lot, who's not a great hit-and-run guy. One of the other times a leadoff man reached Ben Francisco was with a double. You're not going to hit and run there. Jeff Mathis reached to lead off another inning. Escobar hitting behind him, I do like Escobar as a hit-and-run man. I really do, and I would tend to try to turn that on there. But again, Jeff Mathis is a guy who, if your hitter doesn't make contact, he's a dead duck on the bases. I think that Escobar, I think that Omar Vizquel, well, I know that any time they get the opportunity to be in a hit-and-run situation with Omar Vizquel at the plate, they will take it. But those are your two strongest hit-and-run guys on this team. So I don't expect to see it a whole big whack at times, but I think when the opportunity presents itself, when you have the right combination of base runner and hitter, then you'll see it. Doesn't mean they're not being aggressive. We're going to take a look at the scoreboard, see what else is going on. Scoreboard watching on the second weekend of the season because the Blue Jays are tied for first in the AL East. Jays take down the Orioles 9-2. It is the Honda Post Game Show on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays take down the Baltimore Orioles 9-2 to move to 5-4 and back into a tie for first place in the American League East with the Orioles, half a game ahead of the Yankees and Rays. And let's see what's going on. The Yankees don't play until later tonight, but the Rays are losing 6-4 in Boston to the Red Sox. And who'd have thunk it? With Carl Crawford already on the shelf, Jacoby Ellsbury goes down, and the Tampa Bay Rays maybe about to lose their third in a row in Boston, fourth straight overall. Cody Ross took Matt Moore deep, a three-run homer in the second inning, and Boston is up 6-4. Moore, who is supposed to be the next great rookie who's going to win the Cy Young and MVP the same season and probably throw a perfect game every time out, gave up 6 runs on 8 hits in 6 1/3 innings with 4 walks, and is on the hook for the loss. Elsewhere quickly in the American League, the Cleveland Indians lead Kansas City 10-4 in the top of the sixth. Detroit over the White Sox 3-1 in the bottom of the eighth. Texas trailing Minnesota 3-1. That one is in the bottom of the eighth. The Blue Jays are off tomorrow, and the Tampa Bay Rays come to town for 3, maybe on a 5-game losing streak. Starting on Tuesday night, it'll be Ricky Romero against Jeff Niemann. Join us, won't you? We're on the air at 7 Eastern. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Hallett, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Joseph Chilia, Dylan Brown, I'm Mike Wilner. Good afternoon from Rogers Center.
Entertaining on and off the field. Check out Brett Laurie on Twitter at BLaurie13. Blue Jays baseball continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Here's a drive to left field, deep at the wall. This one is gone. Brett Laurie, his first. Number one on the season for Brett Laurie, and the Blue Jays have caught him at one.
Not only home run number one for Brett Laurie here in the ninth game of the season, but extra base hit number one for Brett Laurie, who would go on to single in a run with the bases loaded and get hit by a pitch with the bases loaded. So a 3 RBI day for Brett Laurie, who was 2-for-4 and raises that batting average up over 300. He's now hitting 306, though the slugging has a ways to go with only the one extra base hit. But that bat's coming around. Edwin Encarnacion's bat has been a constant all year long. Jose Bautista hits the ball awfully hard twice today again. Seems like it's just a matter of time before the hits are going to start to fall for him. And the Blue Jays score 7 runs in the sixth inning, beating the Baltimore Orioles 9-2, avoiding the sweep, and moving to 5-4. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Extendo Blue Jays Talk, going all the way to 5:30. Starting at 5 o'clock, maybe even a little earlier. Ben Ennis is going to join us, and we're going to have a little impromptu Blue Jays this weekness right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca. Right now, let us go back to the phones. Steven is in Markham. Welcome to the Extendo Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike. Going good, man. Listen, I want to bring up a point here.
Sure.
I'm a guy that believes where there's smoke, there's fire, and this is old news, but I'm going to bring it back up again anyways. Jose Bautista looks lost at the plate.
No, he doesn't.
Number one, on the double that he hit, he was fooled. He was out in front of a changeup. Okay, he hit it good, hit it in the gap, it fell in. I believe.
Who in the major leagues is not out in front of a changeup?
Mike, he was fooled on that pitch. He hit it off his front foot, and the ball went into the gap. And basically, the ball probably should have been caught. But that's neither here nor there. The point I'm trying to bring up is this: since that story broke last year, Jose Bautista has done nothing.
Since what story broke last year?
You know the story last year about the guy in the center field bleachers.
An enormous load of crap that is. That story broke in April of last year. Jose Bautista was the American League Player of the Month in April and May last year, and I think he might have been in July too. He dropped off in August and September. There is no question about that. But to suggest that the man in white has something to do with Jose Bautista's rough start to the season, I'm sorry. Tony in London, be better than the last guy.
Hello, Mike.
Hello.
I share your enthusiasm for the team this year, looking at the four starters, not quite officially, but almost a quality start from each of the four, and you throw in Carreño's one start, which wasn't that bad. But I think during spring training, if you recall, I don't know if you do, an article by Bob Elliott that really hit the nail on the head. And the two areas where the Jays have to improve or where there's a real test is games against Tampa Bay and the interleague games, which both traditionally haven't gone very well. Last year, 6-12 against Tampa Bay and I think 8-10 against the interleague.
Yeah, they have been a disappointment in interleague pretty much on a regular basis. It's kind of nuts that way.
Well, I think as you say, there are good signs here, but I think the real test, like I say, will be in these two areas. And the Rays are coming up now pretty well cold, and we'll see.
Well, who knows? They could come in having won two in a row. I think that to say that these next three games against the Tampa Bay Rays are going to be the real test, I think that's putting way too much on a three-game series. And baseball can't be broken down that way. I mean, I know that there are people out there right now who are saying the fact that the Blue Jays just lost a series to the Baltimore Orioles means that they will not be a contending team this year, because contending teams don't lose series to the Baltimore Orioles at home. And that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, if they get swept by the Rays, that all that means is that they got swept by the Rays.
Well, I don't mean just one series. I mean there's going to be 18 games this year,
right,
against them. So that's what I'm inferring, that eventually, as you will be playing more series against them.
Yeah, but we're only getting six of those games before the All-Star break.
Yes, this year is a little different. You do see in past years they hardly played the American League East. And this year it's a little different. And the interleague play starts even earlier, I believe, about a month from now.
It starts the same time it always does, that one weekend on Victoria Day weekend.
And then well into
June. Then it waits until later.
Right. And it was good to see the offense come alive today. One point about Bautista. I mean, I know a lot of people they've drawn questions about him, but you know there was another player that the Blue Jays had years ago that wasn't very remarkable in the minor leagues and didn't do too well early in his career. Actually, was with the Jays, and then he went on to make his mark even better with Detroit and the Yankees, and that was Cecil Fielder. So there has been a precedent. That there is a player that can come from humble beginnings.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch. It's not entirely the same situation, but yeah, there are guys who've done such things before, not to the extent that Jose Bautista has. There's no question about that. But Cecil Fielder's, and I mean, this was a guy who was a platoon player with power, who couldn't find a spot, went to Japan for a year, and came back and was a star. This is the Extendo Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590. And Mark in Mississauga, you're
hey,
up
Mike,
next.
How are you?
I'm all right. Go ahead.
Good. Well, I was calling you for a point, but then I got two people before me going me a little nuts. Number one, the guy just before me. Him and Bob Elliott, they got to understand it's a new season, it's a new team. Forget Tampa Bay, forget the Interleague, this year is our year. Number two, the guy before him. Jose Bautista looking lost at the plate. The only thing lost was that guy on the phone. And as for you, Mike, you're doing an amazing job, but you have to understand we're going to win 110 games this year. 90 games will not get us a playoff with American League East, let alone the American League this year. There's a lot of good teams. You heard it from me first. We're going to win over 110 games. I'm out of here. Love you. Keep doing a good job.
Mark, I love the optimism. I do. And I hope you said that tongue-in-cheek, because if not, you are setting yourself up to be disappointed rather hugely. I feel like I can say with no doubt in my mind that the Blue Jays are not going to win 110 games this year. But I can also say that 90 wins will probably be enough. 90 wins was enough to win the wild card last year, and last year there was only one wild card. So I don't think that the 90 wins would be a bad thing at all. Craig in Toronto, you're on the Extendo Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Mike. I just want to say I hope the fans are going to come around on Colby now. He's looking great, and I always have confidence in him. Like, the Gold Glove defense he puts out there, so much better than what we had with Raja and Corey Patterson last year. And just another little comment, just a big face palm to the people with, you know, Jose Bautista lost at the plate, you know, since April, that one guy said. Like, the guy was, like, over 400 OBP the whole year, like, even when he was struggling, so-called struggling in the later months. And this year, I think he's a little off with his timing, but he'll come around.
Jose Bautista led the major leagues in on-base plus slugging last year, which is pretty good for a guy who was lost at the plate for the last 5 months of the season. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate the call. It's very easy to look at a guy who's not hitting and say he looks lost at the plate. Somebody called up and said Colby Rasmus looked like he had no clue what he was doing up there a week into the season because he was hitting 110 or whatever, when every other at bat was a rope and it was just into somebody's glove. Jose Bautista does not look lost at the plate. He's starting to hit balls hard. He looks very different than he looked for the most part of the last 2 years. He does look a little more tentative. He looks kind of angrier and certainly more frustrated. And more vocal about that, although I don't know if he's more vocal about that. He's always been vocal about that. But he doesn't look lost. Not at all. Again, today he absolutely smoked two balls, and he did yesterday as well. And hopefully soon they'll start to either drop or get out. Speaking of getting out, Zach Cosby has an update for us. I don't know what that means, but when he's done, there will be more Extendo Blue Jays talk. Jays beat the Orioles 9-2 at Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Runners at second and third, two outs. Pitch,
line to right, that's a base hit, and that goes all the way to the wall. Davis scores, Mathis scores, loping into second, Yunel Escobar with a two-run double. The Blue Jays 6, the Orioles 2.
All part of that seven-run sixth inning, and when it was all over, the Blue Jays led 8-2 on the way to a 9-2 win. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Extendo Blue Jays talk here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're taking your phone calls. We'll have a special guest join us soon. Rich is in Fergus. Rich, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you. Go ahead.
Question of Travis Snyder. He's tearing up Triple A again, and every time he comes up, he's good for about 2, 3, 4 weeks. Then he hides away again. What's your deal with him?
Well, the deal with him is that he either gets hurt or doesn't perform to the satisfaction of the people running the show and get sent down. One of the other things has happened every year that Travis Snyder's been up here, and this is the Jays' last chance to get him right, because after this season, he's out of options. So I think that they're going to be really, really slow to move with him. Alex Anthopoulos made the point in the preseason that Snyder has never spent a full year at any one minor league level, or at least not since he was in rookie ball. So they may be interested in giving him the whole year in Las Vegas, but I wonder. I mean, he is tearing it up, though who knows what that means in Las Vegas. But he does add something to this roster here, because, you know, the last couple of games, or the last few, that the Jays have had slim leads late, Eric Thames has been taken out for defense. And Travis Snyder wouldn't have to be taken out for defense, and that could allow the Jays to use Rajay Davis the way they want to use him, which is as that late-inning pinch-running threat. So having Snyder here gives the Jays more flexibility that way, but I don't know if that's enough of a reason for them to make the move if Thames is doing okay in the major leagues, and right now Thames is doing okay in the major leagues.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Sorry, it didn't sound like you were satisfied with the answer, but I apologize. That's the way it is. We go to Raptorize. John, you're next.
Yo, Mike.
Yo, John.
So, man, I got two questions. No, I got one question and one compliment for you. The question is, what's your take on this pitch count and stuff? You know, because I thought Draper could have went the whole nine today. And then I heard you talking about Alvarez and Hernandez, and you were saying something like they might pull him out, you know, toward the end of the year. We had so many innings. But what if they're in the pennant race?
Henderson Alvarez.
Yeah.
Yes, my take on this is that science has shown definitively that there's a way to lessen the odds, to lower the odds that a pitcher is going to get hurt. And the way to do that is to be careful with pitch counts and be careful with innings as they work their way towards becoming an established 200-inning guy. And nobody's doing it based on gut. Nobody's doing it based on just, you know, kind of an idea they have that they think is probably a good idea. It's based on science, and it's based on hard numbers, and that's why they're following these formula. And if they're right, who knows? Pitchers are still dropping like flies. They still get hurt all the time, but they believe that doing it this way helps to mitigate the chances of those injuries.
Well, okay. You know, there's a lot of baseball history which goes against that theory, because...
No, there isn't.
No?
No, there isn't at all. There's a lot of baseball history.
Like cats and dogs before, man.
Sure they were. You just never heard of them because it happened before they got to the big leagues, or they got to the big leagues and washed out because they'd been overworked forever. I firmly believe that over the years there were hundreds of guys who blew shoulders and blew elbows, and, you know, guys' careers ended at 30 and 31 because they blew out their arm. And, you know, whether that means they popped an elbow ligament or they tore a labrum or whatever it is that we know it to be now, that used to happen all the time.
Okay. My compliment is that yesterday when we had a little hee-haw about Brent in the Skiller home, you to tell me something that was, you ever saw something dumber when you came up with it today when we were talking with Jerry or Allen. And you pointed out that when Pedro was throwing a no-hitter.
Oh, yeah, that was dumber, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I should have pointed that out yesterday. Thank you, John. I appreciate the call. Raptorized John called in yesterday and asked if I'd ever seen anything dumber than Brett Laurie trying to steal home in the second inning. And I said, of course, I didn't think that was even close to the dumbest thing I'd ever seen. But I couldn't come up on the spot with something. And earlier in the game, we were talking about Shin-Soo Choo charging the mound, and I recalled Reggie Sanders getting hit by a pitch by Pedro Martinez in the ninth inning of a perfect game bid, and Sanders charging the mound because Pedro, he thought Pedro did it on purpose. That's just about the dumbest thing I've ever seen on a baseball field. Andrew in Pickering, you're on the Extendo Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, Mike, thanks for taking my call, man.
Thanks for calling.
I just want to say, so far this year, I think the three MVPs of the Blue Jays have been Edwin Encarnacion, Kelly Johnson, and Colby Rasmus. Those three guys have impressed me more than anyone else this year. And as far as Lori Steele's home plate yesterday, I have absolutely no problem with that, man. Two outs, Bautista up with an 0-2 count. He's been playing, you know, not too great so far this year. I love the aggressiveness. I love Lori going for that, man. He almost made it. And I say, keep it up, man. Keep it up. If next time you're on third base, go for the steal again. Keep it up, man. I just want to hear what you think. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks. I don't know if I would go so far as to say next time you're on third base, go for it again. I think if you have a pitcher pitching from the windup, if you think you have him timed, if the best hitter in baseball the last 2 years isn't at the plate, and you think you can steal that base, depending on the situation, why not? I would love to see Brett Lowry steal home five times a season. I mean, it's Jackie Robinson Day, and Jackie used to do that all the time. And I like the three guys you brought up. You didn't mention any of the starting pitchers who've been fantastic, but I'm sure you're just talking about the offense. We'll get to one more call, then we'll bring in our special guest. Sarah is in Israel. Where in Israel are you, Sarah?
Beit Shemesh.
Beit Shemesh. All right. I probably couldn't find it on a map, but I've heard of it.
It's like close to Jerusalem.
Very nice. And now it's like, what, 11 o'clock at night, midnight?
It's 10 to 12. Yeah, we have late nights here watching the Jays.
All right. Well, thanks for staying up later with the Blue Jays.
Yeah. So I was wondering, when the Jays have to go back to a five-man rotation, who will they use?
I'm wondering the same thing. You know, we had Alex Anthopoulos up here for the first couple innings talking to Jerry, and the subject arose of who might that fifth starter be. And the only thing that Alex definitively said was that it's not going to be Deck McGuire, and McGuire's gotten hammered in his first two starts. It could be the names that were brought up were Chad Jenkins, Drew Hutchison, Joel Carreño, and John Farrell today mentioned Aaron Laffey as well to send him back down and try to get him stretched out for that start. And it's next Saturday night in Kansas City is the next time the Blue Jays need a fifth starter. I don't know. And I hesitate to even hazard a guess. It would be Carreño would be on 5 or 6 days rest on an extra day. Hutchison, I believe, would also be on an extra day. I don't know if it lines up with Chad Jenkins. I know they like Jenkins a lot. I would be surprised if it was Aaron Laffey because he hasn't pitched in a week. So I think it's going to be one of those three righties. And Carreño did fine in his start in Cleveland, the third game of the season. He did very well in his start in AAA. I'm interested to see how he pitches next time out with Vegas, because if he's good again, I wouldn't be surprised to see it be Joel Carreño. I think if I had to rank them 1 through 3, who it might be, I would say Carreño first, Jenkins second, Hutchison third.
All right, and it will be like a while before we see Cecil back up.
I think it'll be a while before we see Cecil back up. Yeah, if we see Cecil back up. Absolutely. Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate the call. Go to bed. It's almost midnight in Beit Shemesh, Israel, right now. It is the Extendo Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Last year, we started a podcast. This young man that just talked there, Ben Ennis, had this wonderful idea. I'd been doing a show called The Blue Jays this week for probably 7 or 8 years, but it kept getting shorter and shorter every year because it was basically made to fill the time between the top of the hour when the ESPN Sunday night pregame started. And originally they started at 7:45, then they moved to 7:35 and 7:15. I was like Nat X. I had a 5-minute show because the man wouldn't give me 10. And then they pushed it all the way back to 7 o'clock. So the Blue Jays this week on the air ended, but podcastically,
I didn't want to see it die.
No, and why would you?
I don't know why you would. I wanted it to survive,
it
survived
program.
On the internet.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. We got to talk about the Blue Jays, but not just the Blue Jays. We got to talk about everything that was going on in Major League Baseball. We got us some pretty in-depth statistical analysis as well.
Yeah,
like, I think people like that.
I think they did, too. I don't know what the numbers were on iTunes, but I'm
led
to
understand. A million every episode.
Yeah, I'm led to understand it was the number one podcast
in
on
the world.
Earth.
Yeah, on Earth.
Yes.
Not
yes.
just baseball.
No.
On Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
It was pretty awesome. And we have to revive it, and it's being revived in some sort of new form this year.
Yeah.
Because we did like a video podcast.
I don't know if we can fully
podcast.
Talk about it or whatever. I mean, we already we filmed.
Right.
So I guess we should be able to talk about it, you
would hope.
I think
so. We've done something.
Yeah, the good people at TD Bank are doing we're part of this video podcast on sportsnet.ca. It's going to be on iTunes. Hopefully on YouTube. It's going to be all over the interwebs.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to download it, watch it off the Sportsnet site. And we got to also discuss the podcast itself. The video podcast is only going to be about 10 minutes or so, but we're going to have to discuss if maybe we want to expand our portion of the video podcast into a longer audio
right,
podcast.
Because the video podcast, us talking, is only going to be 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But you'll intersperse
I think people want more
with various
than 5 minutes
interviews
of Mike
and
Wilmer.
Stuff.
Well, at least.
I don't know. I think they want
six or
they
seven
want more
minutes.
Ben Ennis. Got to have more Ben Ennis, I think, is the deal.
Yeah.
But the video podcast will also include interviews and various and sundry fun
yeah.
things.
You know what? My lovely wife had a great idea today because she loves when the she's here, by the way, Jessica.
Yeah, I can see her.
Yeah,
actually.
She's right here. She mentioned she loves the ancillary things to sports. Like she loves the Zamboni. She loved before the game coming to see the field workers, the grounds
they
crew.
They call it grounds crew.
Yeah, the grounds baseball. Crew. Well, they were working on the field. Yeah.
All right.
Whatever. Anyway, she loves to see that whole schlamazel go on before
Do
the game.
Do you know that the mound goes up and down? Do
yes,
you know
I was telling
it's
her
on
that.
Water and stuff?
Yeah, they flip it yeah, over, yeah, right? Yeah, cool. So I don't know. That might be an interesting video podcast. Hey, you know what? If you have a good idea for the video podcast, how about you tweet me? Bennis Snett.
Bennis Snett is yeah. how you would tweet him. Bennis, S-N-E-T. And let him know. This man is in charge of all things podcastic. Mm. And we'll revive the at Jays This Week Twitter handle
yeah.
at some
have
point,
to change
too.
Change the name of
yeah,
it.
I might have to Sportsnet it up
yeah,
a
we'll
little
see.
Bit as well. So.
A lot of things up in the air. It's going to
yeah,
be great.
Yeah, it's going to be fun and exciting. And it is the world is our oyster. And we're going to... my plan for this afternoon, because the Raptors are coming up on Sportsnet 590
The
Fan.
Good to hear, actually.
This is the plan. Yeah. The plan is that I got Sunday Night Volleyball at 6 o'clock. So
okay.
You're going to... No, we'll talk. We'll kind of do a radio version of the podcast from 5 o'clock
awesome.
On Eastern Time. But, you know, now we got a couple of minutes. Would you like to take a telephone call here on the Blue Jays?
Let's
talk?
Do it.
Because at some point in time, I do believe you will be hosting this show.
Stop it!
I know. This is the thing
to fill.
Well, yeah, it's true.
I don't know, and I don't know how I feel about these headsets too. They're too small. I don't feel like I'm wearing a headset. They're very small.
You're wearing
compared
the,
to
the. You're wearing the Jerry headset now. See, I've got this little blue deal
oh,
thing.
Okay, so yeah,
the microphones are very cool. Let's take a phone call. This is Ben Ennis. Keith is in Scarborough. Keith, say hello to Blue Jays This Week podcast host Ben Ennis.
Hello, Ben Ennis. How you doing, sir? It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Keith.
I feel special here. I get to make the first phone call. This is pretty cool.
Tremendous, Keith.
Well done, Keith. Get to it.
Wait, what I was listening to a whole bunch of callers earlier. Everybody seems to be raining down hard on the Blue Jays. You know, oh my God, they lost 2 or 3 to Baltimore. And what happens if Tampa comes in and they get swept? And, Mike, you brought up a good point. You said if they get swept, they get swept. And I completely agree with you. This is a young team. They are loaded with talent. I think they're trying to do too much, too soon, too fast. They look uptight a bit. And I think if they kind of relax a bit, boom, I think everything is just going to explode and they're going to do a whole lot better than they are now.
Well,
I think it's a great team.
I think it's got a chance to be a great team. I think doing a whole lot better than they're doing right now is, you know, that's asking a lot because, again, right now they're on a 90-win pace. But let me ask you this, Ben Ennis, because like me, you grew up around here.
Yeah.
The Toronto sports
Born
scene.
Born in Winnipeg, but yeah.
Oh, well, what whatever. Can you do about that?
Sure.
The Toronto sports scene is ingrained in you from a young age.
Part of the fabric of my being.
It's not specific to Toronto that everyone always seems to be waiting for something to go wrong, is it?
I feel like it might be. You know what, actually? Now that I say that, maybe Red Sox fans felt the same way before 2004, though. They felt like the other shoe was always about to drop, 86, of course. And it tortured fan bases, I guess. This fan base, I mean, it was only 20 years ago that they won the World Series.
It's not that long.
It's only a five-year grace period, though, Mike.
But it's also not like they've been teased. You know, I mean, I blame the Maple Leafs for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a Leafs thing, right?
Right.
Isn't it?
I think so.
That's a tortured fan base.
Yeah, and I think the Leafs have caused everyone to kind of feel like nothing good can ever happen in Toronto sports.
Yeah, they've seen some bad stuff go down. And, I mean, the worst thing, I think, as a sports fan that can happen to you is a blown save. It's the worst thing because you feel so great. It's late in the ball game. You can see the finish line. You can see that W about to be posted. And then heart ripped right out of you, and a couple of times it's already happened this season.
Four times already
Ridiculous.
This season. The Blue Jays are on pace for 90 wins and 72 blown saves this season.
I don't think they're going to get to 72. I would hope so.
I don't think so either. Thanks for all the calls. We will podcast on the radio the Blue Jays this week. On the other side is Zach Cosby's update. Thanks to Dylan Brown, Joe Sicilia, Tom Young, Ben Ennis. Thanks to all of you for listening. Blue Jays win 9-2. They're back Tuesday for the first of three against Tampa. Stick with us for another half hour. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.